Sadvaitam sadvadutam parijana sahita kishvache tanyadevam shri radha krishna padam sagana vaita shri shakam vishcha. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
So it is October. What is it today? 20th, 2009, in Vienna, Slovenia, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 30, Text 18. The bad death. In description of adverse fruitive activities. Evam kutumba bharane.
Evam kutumba bharane.
Vapritatma jitendriya.
Vapritatma jitendriya.
Mriyate rudatam swanam.
Mriyate rudatam swanam.
Uruveda nayastadi.
Uruveda nayastadi.
Evam kutumba bharane.
Evam kutumba bharane.
Vyapritatma jitendriya. Mriyate rudatam swanam. Uruvedana yastati.
Evam kutumba bharane.
Evam kutumba bharane.
Vyapritatma jitendriya.
Thus, kutumba bharane, in maintaining a family, vaprita, engrossed, atma, his mind, ajita,
uncontrolled,
indriya, his senses, mriyate, he dies, rudantam, while crying, swanam, his relatives, uru, great, vedanaya, with pain, asta, bereft of, dihi, consciousness. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thus the man who is engaged with uncontrolled senses in maintaining a family dies in great grief, seeing his relatives crying. He dies most pathetically in great pain and without consciousness. So this is the death everyone is afraid of, isn't it? That one will have great pain, no consciousness, everyone will be grieving. This is what everybody is fearing, this kind of death. Look at the Sanskrit. Vyapita atma, his self, his mind, his self, is vyapita. It's completely engrossed in maintaining the in the kutumba bhavane. It's completely engrossed in the affairs of this world. And ajita indriya, he has uncontrolled senses. Are you not able to keep up?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I talking slowly enough? More slowly? Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that at the time of death, one will be absorbed in the thoughts which he accumulated during his lifetime. A person who had no other idea than to properly maintain his family members must have family affairs in his last thoughts. That is the natural sequence for a common man. The common man does not know the destiny of his life. He is simply busy in this flash of life, maintaining his family. At the last stage, no one is satisfied with how he has improved the family economic condition. Everyone thinks that he could not provide sufficiently. Because of his deep family affection, he forgets his main duty of controlling the senses and improving his spiritual consciousness. Sometimes a dying man entrusts the family affairs to either his son or some relative, saying, "I am going. Please look after the family." He does not know where he is going. But even at the time of death, he is anxious about how his family will be maintained. Sometimes it is seen that a dying man requests the physician to increase his life for at least a few years so that the family maintenance plan which he has begun can be completed. These are the material desires of the conditioned soul. He completely forgets his real engagement to become Krishna conscious and is always serious about planning to maintain his family, although he changes families one after another. Evam kutumba bharane vyapritatma jitendriya miyate rudantam swanam uvedanayastati. Thus the man who engaged with uncontrolled senses in maintaining a family dies in great grief, seeing his relatives crying. He dies most pathetically, in great pain and without consciousness. So most religious systems in the world today are glorifying family life. They talk about, in America, they have a term called family values. And they basically propagate that religious people should be responsible family persons. Now, such instruction is appropriate in a society where people are trying to enjoy their senses irresponsibly. So, just like now in most countries, it is illegal to get married under the age of like 16 or 18. But still people are having sex before they are 16 or 18, and they are having children. Sometimes they are killing those children. So this is our society, where people are still enjoying sex life, they're enjoying earning money, they're enjoying having a house, but they're doing it without taking any kind of responsibility, without doing any jagya. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, one gets all happiness in this world, but one has to do the appropriate jagya. So it is certainly right and good that in modern society, we say to people, don't try to enjoy your senses irresponsibly without jagya. If you want to enjoy having a member of the opposite sex, if you want to enjoy having a home, if you want to enjoy having money, if you want to enjoy a kitchen where you cook your own food, and all these things, if you want to enjoy being able to engage in your psychophysical nature as Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that's fine. That's not a problem. Do it according to yajna. Don't do it irresponsibly. So that is certainly appropriate, but that is not the highest platform. It's like we may say to somebody, all right, if you're eating meat, at least become a vegetarian. Right? And that is a good instruction. A Prabhupada would tell some people, at least don't eat cows. If you want to eat an animal, eat a goat or a dog, but don't eat a cow. And then we say to people, better you don't eat any meat or fish or eggs. And then we can say, okay, now offer your food to Krishna. So at first somebody is thinking, I want to eat this food, I like pizza, but I'll offer it to Krishna. And gradually they start thinking about Krishna. But here we find in the Bhagavatam, which of course was spoken at a time when people were very responsible in their family life. People were not generally having just boyfriend, girlfriend without responsibility and with abortion and birth control and so many things. It's telling us that to become attached to family life or to become attached to anything in this world is not the perfection of life. In fact, on that level, even the animals are attached to their family, to being very responsible. You know, that's better than being lower than an animal, but it's not ultimate spiritual life. Ultimate spiritual life is something else. And the whole idea of jagya, of taking a family, or jagya of doing being a proper Brahmin, or as in the Bhagavad Gita, proper kshatriya, is meant to awaken a higher consciousness. So, of course, there's a myth in the world. As Prabhupada says here, at the last stage, no one is satisfied with how he has improved the family condition. So there's a myth among the materialists that if you just get a good education, marry the right person, have good children who do well in school, have a beautiful house and a nice car in your garage, then you will die satisfied. Right? That is their myth, that you'll be very old and you'll say, yes, I've done everything I wanted. I am now satisfied. I have no regrets. I have fulfilled all my desires, and now I can just die. This is a story that the materialists tell, and they have this story in books and movies, and this is the propaganda. If you just live material life the right way, you'll be completely satisfied, and you can die a perfect, peaceful, satisfied death. In a number of places, Prabhupada says, this is not possible. There will always be some regrets. Lamentation. Thinking, I could have done something better. I could have done something different. Just talking to one new devotee, and she has a young child, and she thought, to be a devotee, I have to leave my husband because he's not a devotee. So she left him, and now she is simply lamenting. Why wasn't I a good wife? Why can't I be a good mother? And all of us make some mistakes, big mistakes, small mistakes. I met another lady recently who said, you know, I just couldn't be a good mother. My child didn't turn out right. My child is always angry with me. And this is the tendency. You know, you start out when you're young with high hopes. Yes, I will marry the perfect person. I will have perfect children. I will live in the perfect house. I will have the perfect car. I will have the perfect job. Or maybe the brahmacharis, they think, I will be a perfect renunciate. Yeah. I'll somehow have a perfect life on the material platform. And it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Well, we make mistakes. We do things that later we say, why did I do that? Why did I say that? And we say, if only, if only, if only I had married a different person. If only I had never married. If only I had married. Sometimes you find this people are, you know, 45, 50. I met one devotee like this. She's 58. When she talked to me, she was 58. She said, I joined when I was 30, and I'd already had some boyfriend. I decided I'm going to be renounced, but now I want to marry. I said, it's too late. But these are our lamentations. If only. My father-in-law bought an insurance policy for $40,000 that was supposed to pay for his son's education. But when my husband was ready to go to university, the insurance company says, oh, this only pays for the education if you die. So since you're still living, you've just lost this money. And my husband said the rest of his life, his father would say, if I only had that $40,000 in my hand today, what would I do with it? Something else. So we all think like this. If only I had done this. If only I had spent this money wisely. If only I had lived in this place. If only I had made this decision. If I could do it all over again, I would make these choices. And Krishna says, okay, go and do it again. Try again. So one will never be satisfied. One can think, oh, I'll be different from everybody else. I will have a perfect life. I will have no lamentation. I will have no regrets. My dear friend, that is not possible. Rather, one will die with so many regrets. I wish this had happened. What about this? What about this? How can I take care of this? How can I take care of this? What will happen? What will happen? And Prabhupada says here, the person is not thinking, where am I going? Right? Like, let's say someone lives here in this temple for a very, very long time. And then GBC comes and says, now I want you to go someplace else. And so they're thinking, oh, what did I do wrong when I was here? What this can I fix? This can I fix? But they never ask the GBC, where am I going? I mean, when we were teenagers, we used to do this, just get in the car and go for a drive. That was when petrol was very cheap, you know, 20 cents a gallon. Going no place, just driving. Where are you going? Just driving. So the person dying, he's not thinking, where am I going? What about me? Right? I'm so worried about my children and grandchildren and my wife and my... But where am I going? And where ultimately are they going? So we all want a satisfying life. Anybody here want an unsatisfying life? We all want a life that is meaningful. We want to feel we've done something meaningful. Does anybody here want a meaningless life? No. We all want meaning. We all want satisfaction. We all want a sense, I've done something that has some significance. But how will we do this materially? First of all, it's an illusion. It's like a dream. You think, well, wait a minute. You know, I know a dream doesn't have any substance because maybe in my dream I'm talking with Majjana Leela, but in the morning she says, I wasn't talking with you last night. So we think this isn't real. But just like a computer game, you see people, they get a character in a computer game and everyone is experiencing the same illusion, but it's just illusion. And how many times does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? At least twice. Maybe three times. We're not doing anything. We're just watching this. I'm not really Urmila, some American lady. That's not me. And I'm not even really in Slovenia. I'm just watching. I'm just simply watching. I'm observing and desiring. While this illusory body that's fashioned of the modes of material nature is doing so many things. Just like you manipulate the three colored lights and it makes a picture on the screen or on the computer, they manipulate ones and zeros and it becomes a character. So the three modes of material nature are combining and it looks like here's some person with a personality and a character and activities and so many things. And I'm part of a family. But then the person controlling the game sometimes says, okay, this game's over. And then you forget everything. We forget who was my mother and father in my last life. And even if you can remember, you do some hypnosis and you remember. Or there's one devotee in London who remembers her past life. She was a brahmachari. She lived. And she's gone to see who were her parents in her other life. It's interesting. But there's not so much attachment. It's not that she feels some deep attachment to these people from her other life. That person that's formed out of our memories, I was born here, I went to school here, I did that, that's gone. They're all afraid of that, isn't it? Having your memory wiped out, not knowing what is my name, who's my family, where I'm from. But that's what happens at death. Okay, new personality, new activity, new body. How can you have any success in that kind of an illusion? What is the meaning of success? I successfully get some gold in a computer game? How is that success? What does that mean? And we try to create meaning artificially. Oh, I'm going to build some building or start some project that will last for 100 years. But even 100 years, it's not going to satisfy us. So what should we do? Because people are afraid, if I take the spiritual life, then I'll be irresponsible. That if I just work for Krishna, then, you know, I won't care about maintaining my family anymore. I'll just run off and, you know, move in the ashram. We used to do that, of course. We used to just walk away from everything and just move into the ashram, forget about our education and our job and whatever. Of course, that's what Arjuna wanted to do also. He said, now that I have become Krishna conscious, I'm just going to leave. I'll walk away from the battlefield. I'll walk away from my responsibilities. That will be spiritual. And Krishna said, no, you have the wrong idea of spiritual. That is not spiritual. And the hint here is in this verse. Vyaprita atma ajita indriya. What is the absorption of your mind and what is the activities of your senses? That's how you differentiate between the spiritual and the material. Of course, if you're very spiritually advanced, you can't just quit the game. You're allowed to quit the game. Aham tvam sarvapapa vyo mokshishami masu jaha. Don't worry about anything that's left in the game, but any debts you have in the game, any unfinished business. I'll take care of that, Krishna says. You come to real life. So one can do that externally. That is an avadutta. An avadutta is quitting the game externally. They're not in varnashram. They're not part of society. They're acting like externally like a crazy person. They're not part of society. And that is all right. That is one possibility. Or one can also quit the game with one's consciousness. And you may say, well, if you've quit the game with your consciousness, why would you keep playing? You keep playing either to set an example of how to play as a devotee for those who are materially attached, or because Krishna's given it to you as your service. Krishna's given it to you as your service. I have some business in this world of illusion for you to do. Like you might have business in a prison or business in an insane asylum. I have some service to do. So how do we get from here to there? If we admit I am attached. I am attached to enjoying this world. I want to enjoy this world, even if one's attached to enjoying this world as a renunciate. That's also enjoyment. Different flavor. Okay, I'm attached to enjoying this world. So let me start by offering Krishna the fruits. I'm still wanting to enjoy, I want to enjoy the fruits, but I give those fruits to Krishna. Then I start giving the activities to Krishna. I stop trying to enjoy the fruits. I start just getting my enjoyment from the activities which I'm offering to Krishna, but I'm still thinking about my personal enjoyment. Gradually, I just start thinking about my relationship with Krishna. I'm still doing the same things. I'm still going to work. I'm still maintaining my family. Or I'm still studying, or I'm still teaching, whatever my engagement is. But now I'm thinking, my pleasure is in my relationship with Krishna. My pleasure is in pleasing Krishna. I'm not trying to get pleasure from the family or from the renunciation. I'm trying to get pleasure from my relationship with Krishna. And gradually, I'm just thinking, let Krishna be happy. The residents of Vrindavan, they practically forget that they exist. In Vaikuntha, they're totally selfless, and in Vrindavan, they're basically self forgetful. Not because they have no pleasure, but because they're filled with spiritual pleasure. They're filled with spiritual pleasure. So the point is, what is absorbing our mind? What is absorbing our senses? What is absorbing ourself? The word here is Atma. We are all looking, my friends, for pleasure. You cannot have no pleasure. You cannot just say, all right, material life is frustrating and stupid and illusion. I'll be detached. You can't do that. We're Anandamaya Vyasat. We're pleasure seeking. We must seek pleasure. That's how we're made. Prabhupada said the purpose of life is pleasure. You cannot live without pleasure, not for long. If you try to live without pleasure, then usually you become very angry and you get pleasure from your anger. Very critical. You see people who try just, I'm just going to be detached. Even some devotees do this. I'm just going to be detached. I'm going to control my senses through iron will. They usually become very critical, offensive and angry people. Have you noticed this? Or sometimes they just fall back to material sense enjoyment. So that is not the way. The mind must be absorbed in something. The mind must be absorbed in something. And it will be absorbed in whatever the something is that we think will give us pleasure. That's natural. I'm going to think about whatever I think will give me pleasure. Or I'll think about avoiding whatever I think will give me pain. My mind is going to be absorbed in one of those two things. How to avoid pain, or how to seek pleasure. So instead, be absorbed in Krishna, who is the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna wants us to be happy. That's his desire, for us to be happy. Just like you want your friends to be happy, right? Isn't it? Doesn't everybody, don't you want your friends to be happy? You want your family to be happy? You want everybody in the temple to be happy? Yeah? If someone says to you, Prabhu, I'm really miserable in my service, you wouldn't say, oh, very good. Now you're advanced. We all want to see people be happy, and that's because Krishna wants that also. But he wants us to be happy by absorption in him, because that is actual happiness. He doesn't want us to have a false happiness. Right, just like if you have some friend who's just sleeping all day. He said, oh, I'm very happy dreaming. That wouldn't please you. You'd say, no, this is not real happiness, if they're just happy being intoxicated. So we should look for the real happiness. And what's really amazing is if one is absorbed in the real happiness of Krishna, then one will also get happiness from one's engagements in this world. Even if you're in family life, then you will really enjoy family life, not because the family life is enjoyable, but because you're doing it for Krishna. You'll no longer be thinking, I'm trying to please my wife. You're thinking, I'm trying to please Krishna. Your wife will never be always pleased with you. It's not possible. Sometimes she'll be pleased with you, and 5 minutes later she won't be pleased with you. It's just the way it is. Please get me a new house. I want to buy a house. I'm so tired of renting. Can we please buy a house? I like this house. Let's buy this house. You buy the house. And then she's so happy. Oh, thank you. You bought me a house. Okay, now look, we have to fix up the kitchen. We have to get a new sink in the bathroom. You do all that. Oh, thank you. I'm so happy. Now look at our car. What about the car? Oh, you know, you make your husband's favorite preparation. You make him lasagna, you know. Salad. And lassi. And he says, wonderful, wonderful meal. But look, right over there under the table, look how dirty it is. Didn't you clean the house today? You'll never satisfy someone. You'll never find happiness by trying to satisfy people in this world directly. Please, it's useless. Don't do this. You'll not do that. Don't think some other jiva is Krishna. I'm going to work in such a way that my family or my friends or my town president or whatever, he's going to be totally happy with me all the time. And that's how I'll find satisfaction. Please forget this. It won't work. But you can make Krishna happy. I'm giving my wife a house to make Krishna happy. Whether my wife is always happy or not, that's not the source of my happiness. My happiness is Krishna pleased with me. I'm doing an honest livelihood to maintain my family because I'm doing it to please Krishna. Krishna's giving me these living entities to take care of. And I'm trying to do it nicely for him. That's all. Why am I cleaning my house? Because it's Krishna's house. I want him to be satisfied. And then one will be more responsible in this world because one will not be working in this world for one's own satisfaction. If I'm working for my own satisfaction materially, then as soon as I'm not getting it, then I don't want to be responsible anymore. Oh, why am I working so hard for my wife? She doesn't even appreciate it. But if I'm doing for Krishna, then where's the question of being irresponsible? Krishna will always appreciate it. Krishna will always appreciate it. Whether you're doing some little service in the temple, or you're working for your family, or you're out preaching, whatever you're doing it to please Krishna. You're doing it to please Krishna. And then there's no question, finished, unfinished business. That's Krishna's business. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. I'm doing my duty for Krishna. Whatever happens, happens. Can you control the result? Who here can control the result of their activities? You can't even control whether or not he stays awake. Who can control the results of their activities? Anybody? So if that's where our happiness is, if I'm thinking the results of my activities is where my happiness is, one must die in lamentation. Have to. Will all the results be perfect? Not possible. How foolish to have my happiness tied to something that guaranteed many of them will not work. Isn't it? It's guaranteed. Just wait till you get older and then you see. And you can't control it. Why have happiness in something I can't control? Madness. I'm going to have my happiness in whether or not my husband is satisfied. My happiness in whether or not I make a lot of money. But you can't control these things. And always anxiety and frustration and dying in great pain and agony. I couldn't get what I wanted. Instead, put your happiness in something you can control. That is sure. And that is whether or not Krishna will be happy. You can control that. And that's not something in the future. Maybe once I buy a house, then my wife will be happy. It's always some future. You have it in the present, maybe once or twice, you know. Oh, now we have a house. Now I'm happy. 5 minutes. Then again, future. But pleasing Krishna, I can do now. I can control it. I can do now, and it can be perfectly successful. And then I will die satisfied. Whether my business is finished or unfinished doesn't matter, because my business is happening at every moment. So that is how to die the perfect death in perfect satisfaction. And then there is no regret. I'm not desiring anything in this world. I don't lament for anything in this world. I'm experiencing joy at every moment in my relationship with Krishna, and then live or die. It doesn't matter. That's just the body, whether the body lives or dies. What does it matter? That's not where my happiness is coming from. So then we'd have a different verse here. The person who dies in transcendental consciousness, who says, "My dear Lord, I've taken care of my family as a service to you, or I've done my renunciation as a service to you. I've done my duties as a service to you. You have been in charge of the results. Whatever good or bad has happened, that is in your hands. And now if you want me to do some other service, I am prepared wherever you want me to go, as long as I have a relationship with you. And I am happy even to be a worm, Kita Janmai. To do with us. as long as I can have that relationship with you, because that's my satisfaction. So that's what we should ask ourselves. Where am I getting my pleasure? What is my attachment? What am I really attached to? Where is my mind? Where am I engaging my mind and my senses? So thank you very much. It's like it, you have this sign right in front of the speaker. This is when the class ends. Of course, it didn't begin at that time, but anyway, this is where the class ends, and then you have a clock right there.
This is for 49 days.
You must end it. This. In some temples, they have a little sign on the lectern, you know. You must end class at this time, but this is, and you have a clock. So, see, I was good, even though we started late. I followed the rules. Okay, questions, comments? Yes.
Thinking of the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Grihastha, so self-realized and so intensely producing Krishna consciousness for others, it comes this asking, this question, why he end up his life with Babaji, only chanting Hare Krishna instead of take sannyas or thinking of preaching more intensely once that he was free from responsibility he took Babaji.
I think there's many answers to that question. One is it that generally the Vaishnavas at that time did not take sannyas. That was something that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati re-established. And another is that Krishna explains that for one who's fully free from the modes of nature, he has no reason to do his ordinary duties, and he has also no reason to give them up. In other words, he's free. And it's really a personal choice at that point. And I'm sure also, you know, maybe Krishna may desire this way or that way. But it's just a personal choice. One is not obligated one way or the other. One is free. Do what you like. You can just be absorbed, or you can help others. No, in order to preach also, this is another part of the answer. In order to preach, Prabhupada says you must come to the Majjhima platform. And certainly it's very satisfying, but it's a different kind of service. It's a different kind of mentality. One may want to taste both. I mean, even we see that so many of our preachers in the Hare Krishna movement, they take some time to do the other. They take some time to just go by themselves and just chant. Be away from people. Right? It's another flavor. Of course, Prabhupada did that before he came to the woods. He was writing books or magazines, but he was mostly absorbed in his own bhajan. He did that for some time. It's a different flavor. I don't think you can explain it just logically. I think it's an affair of the heart. And different devotees will have different desires and service at different times of their life. Also, we see that the different devotees set various examples. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur set an example of a grihastha life where he was very happy with his grihastha life. His wife was supporting his activities. His children all became pure devotees. And Prabhupada's example of a grihastha life was quite different. Prabhupada said he never liked his wife. He said he never had any liking or attachment for his wife. In fact, Prabhupada wanted to take a second wife. You know that? Soon after he was married, Prabhupada looked to get another wife. So he would have two wives. And he was negotiating with some gentleman to marry his daughter. And he was almost at the point of marriage. And his father said, you know, it's good you have a wife you don't like. Take that as mercy. Just stick with the wife you don't like. So Prabhupada never liked his wife. And Prabhupada's children basically didn't become great devotees. One of them sort of became a devotee, and this Prabhupada's granddaughter became a devotee, but not all of Prabhupada's children became devotees. And Prabhupada's wife really, I mean, she was a ritualistic Vaishnav Hindu, but she really didn't become, as Prabhupada said, she wasn't our kind of devotee. And Prabhupada set that example, how to do it, how to be a dutiful grihastha in that sort of a circumstance. Prabhupada also set the example of how to be a grihastha when your business was successful. When Prabhupada's business was successful, he was giving a lot of money to his Guru Maharaj's projects, and he was putting a lot of money also into his own Krishna conscious projects of printing back the Godhead. So he actually, pretty sure he gave almost all the money to build the Gaudiya Math temple in Allahabad. So he gave to temples, and he also had his own preaching projects. And then when Prabhupada's business failed, he set that example. How do you act when your business fails? And then you have Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, who set an example of how to be a brahmachari. They're setting different examples. What to do at the end of life. Prabhupada didn't start his preaching mission till the end of life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was having his preaching mission really his whole life. And Prabhupada did some before then. So it's a different example. Perhaps one reason that the devotees set different examples is to show us, as Prabhupada says, that Krishna consciousness is not stereotyped or narrow. If everybody has the same circumstance and the same example, then we may think, okay, everybody has to do it exactly like this. It's not like that. There's choice. Maybe in the very beginning, when people first take up Krishna consciousness, we give them training, okay, everything has to be like this, like this, like this. In the beginning stages. Devotee is free. Prabhupada says a wonderful purport in the first canto. He talks about Narada Muni, how he can go wherever he wants. There's no particular reason for him. He doesn't have something to achieve. It's his own desire. Devotees have their own desires. Prabhupada also says that when one achieves the bhava stage, that it's just one's personal choice. If you want to stay by yourself and do bhajan, or you want to go out into the preaching field, it's what you personally desire. Does that help at all? I don't know if we can. I mean, unless Bhaktivinoda tells us directly, we cannot know his reason, right? If he says, this is my reason. Otherwise, we can't know. We can just talk on general principles, and we can't say for him specifically why did he choose to do that. I know when Bhaktitirtha Swami was dying, he was talking about how preaching in the world, serving Krishna in the world, means you're always trying to counteract negativity. Prabhupada would often compare it to a battle. Constantly trying to counteract negativity, isn't it? People criticizing, difficulty. And I know Bhaktivinoda Swami, when he was writing, he was talking about, entering into a world of service where it's not like that. Where everything is you cannot make in this world everything favorable for your spiritual life. It's impossible. There'll be something opposing. And he was saying how he was really wanting to become absorbed in service that was devoid of this, where you didn't have this fight against the negative, where it was all just flowing towards Krishna. Sometimes a devotee may want to serve like that. I mean, otherwise, everyone in the spiritual world would leave there and come here to preach. Obviously, some of them like to just stay there and serve Krishna without that. And they're in the mood of just thinking everybody's already engaged according to their service. That's the mood of the Uttamadhikari. Everything's already perfect. Krishna's controlling everything. Everybody's already doing exactly what they're supposed to do. Why should I interfere? I'm just an insignificant being. So that's the mood of the Uttamadhikari. And they can adopt that mood, or they can adopt the mood of, some people are innocent and some people are demons and I have to help you.
last night you make a point that we want to be in peace. But even in our family, as a devotee, you know, if we do something a little service, then not much than this, because people around can say, why be so fanatic? You can stay peaceful, preaching and chanting and go to the temple and have great children. No. Why you should leave? Because somebody doesn't feel the urgency to help this woman in the West. But they say, why be so fanatic? You can preach, you can read Sankirtan, even in the family, you know? Even,
that's true. That's true.
So what's wrong to be in peace like this, you know, to arrange?
That's okay. There's no problem. Who says that's a problem? Why is that a problem? But Krishna is not just peace. He's also adventure. But he's adventure beyond peace. After you come to the platform of peace, then you come to the platform of spiritual adventure. There's no material anxiety. Material anxiety is finished. But there's spiritual excitement. We try to imitate that. Just like people watching a scary movie or an adventure movie. They're just sitting in the chair, right? They're safe. But they're thinking there's some adventure. That's an imitation. Or people go on some ride in a park, you know, those crazy rides? And they're all strapped in, so they're safe. But it feels scary. So, it's like that. Those who are in Krishna's adventures, they already have peace. They already have safety. They know I'm not this body. So the adventure with Krishna is beyond peace. You have to have first peace. Peace comes not from having your material situation. Peace comes from realizing I'm the soul. You can't arrange your material situation to have perfect peace. There'll always be some anxiety. But of course, you can stay. Prabhupada said that if in grihastha life you're completely Krishna conscious, there's no need of being renounced. But most people, when they get older, they want to be renounced. It's natural. Just like most people, when they're in their 20s, teenage 20s, they want the association of the opposite sex. That's natural. So we say, okay, then you be responsible and get married. And most people, when they get to be about 50, they start becoming detached. Even materialistic people, it happens to them. Almost everybody. Of course, in modern society, when this happens to a materialistic person, they just start thinking, oh, I must have married the wrong person. Now I should divorce and marry somebody else. Or I should get a different job. They start feeling so much anxiety. Oh, my youth is now almost over. And I haven't perfectly enjoyed my senses. Because this detachment comes, you realize, I haven't perfectly enjoyed my senses. I haven't achieved full satisfaction. I had all these desires and all these plans, and I worked so hard, and I was so confident that I would achieve them, and I was confident that when I achieved them, then I would be happy. And now I see it's not true. Maybe I didn't achieve them, or else I achieved them, but they didn't bring me the satisfaction that I wanted. And some detachment arises. But if someone doesn't have higher knowledge, then they think, oh, I just have to enjoy the material world in a different way. I just didn't do it right. They don't think the problem is with material enjoyment. They think the problem is with somehow they have to change the situation. But that's also natural. One will lose interest in earning money. One will lose interest in sex life. One will lose interest in just family business. It's natural. It happens to everybody. More or less. And then there's many alternatives. You can stay with the wife and go to holy places, or you can preach. Or you can separate and preach. There's different options. That depends on you. But that's a natural consequence. If you live in a proper life, that is a natural consequence. Just nature. I mean, also, most of my friends, they say, you know, you want to spend more time alone also. And you become a lot less interested in external accomplishments. It's not so interesting anymore. But you can do that with the family or without the family. Those options are there in the scriptures. But there should come a time when sex life is stopped and when economic development is stopped. Those two things. There should come a time when those two things are stopped. Like Prabhupada says, for a store, the store has a closing time. We close at 5 o'clock. So it doesn't matter if there's another customer. 5 o'clock, you close. So a certain time in life, whatever. Now, done. Kama, artha, done. That should come. You may externally stay in the family life, but kama, artha should be done. Of course, that's sometimes difficult for us because now instead of getting married, you know, when we're 15 or 18, we're getting married when we're 40. You're having children when you're 58. So things are all backwards. You can still be a devotee even if your material side of your life is backwards. You can be Krishna conscious in any circumstance. But there is an ideal way of living. Something that's in harmony with the natural progression of the body and mind. And some people, they don't have that desire for money and house and opposite sex when they're, you know, 15 to 25. They just say, no, I want immediately. They prefer the happiness of renunciation. They prefer study and simplicity and freedom. So then Prabhupada said, you can go directly from the brahmachari ashram to the grihastha vanaprastha or sannyasa ashram. So brahmachari may go directly to vanaprastha and skip the grihastha, if that's their pleasure. That they can also do. That's also following their natural psychology. For some people, that's their natural psychology. For some people, they're happier without the opposite sex. They're happier without money. They're happier with simplicity. But Prabhupada says, if you're in Krishna consciousness, you don't need to take up external renunciation. Not necessary. Be in the situation where you feel enlivened. Materially also. Krishna says, use your nature in his service. So your nature means where you feel alive. And for each one of us, that's different. And during our life, that may also change. Whatever makes you feel alive, you do that for Krishna according to the Shastra. It is not that, and for each of us that's a little different. We're individuals. That's our philosophy, right? That we're individuals. So you can be an individual, you're allowed. You don't have to exactly follow somebody else's. All right? If you feel alive and peaceful in a situation, do that for Krishna. according to the instructions of Shastra. As Shastra says, if you want to enjoy like this, these are the rules. And you follow the rules that correspond to how you want to enjoy. Now, if you want to enjoy, if you feel most comfortable and alive having your own money, then you have to work for it. You have to have an honest living. You don't pretend to be a renunciate. Honest. And if you get pleasure from being simple and unattached, then don't get emotional enjoyment from the opposite sex. Be honest. That's no problem. Does that help? Okay, is there anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Vidyana Vaishnava is key.